This is the Art Beauty Podcast special summer series in partnership with New Beauty Magazine. During the months of July and August, we're going to be spicing up your summer with guests directly from the pages of New Beauty Magazine. I'm Amber, and today my fabulous and gorgeous co-host is Dr. Doris Day. She's a board-certified dermatologist specializing in cosmetic and surgical dermatology, practicing right here in New York City. Welcome, Dr. Day.
Thanks for having me on. I'm so excited to co-host with you.
Oh, I love this. So, you know, you are one of the New Beauty top doctors. And one of the things that I found so impressive of you is that not only are you still practicing, but you are still teaching.
Yes, I think it's really important to give back. And actually, when you teach is when you learn the most sometimes. So when I work with the residents at NYU in their dermatology program, they're all brilliant rock stars, and it helps keep me on my toes. And I also love the energy of the new generations of dermatologists. And now, after 20 years of teaching, I watch all of these previous residents now out in the field, blazing trails all across dermatology. And I'm just so proud of them.
I mean, we've come a long way since Botox was like the only option, correct?
You know, it's interesting. We've come a long way, but at the same time, Botox is still the tried and true, most amazing option. And as it's,
Huge, it's a tool.
So we've learned so much. In the beginning, when we have a new product available, we're like, well, let's go to the max and see what this product can do. And when you get FDA approvals for medications and drugs and these devices that we use, what you have to do to get the FDA approval is really show this dramatic change. And unfortunately, that's what gets translated to the public, because the way the FDA trials go is that you have to show a 2-grade difference the way they are now. And that difference isn't always natural, right? It's enough for the FDA to say, okay, you can move, now you can't move. That's a marked difference, line is gone. But in reality, that isn't necessarily the goal. But when you get that approval, you have to market to the way you got it approved. So the companies are in this difficult position where the FDA forces them to have these dramatic and often excessive changes that are not necessarily natural or even desirable. And then they're forced to follow that on the other side. But one thing I like about teaching and being able to practice and lecture is that I can teach to what I've learned and what I've learned from my colleagues and from treating my patients is a natural outcome that isn't necessarily by the FDA approval. It's more off-label or it's more subtle. And it's areas that weren't necessarily approved, but that give the best results. So we're always transitioning and transforming the way these products are used. So they're always new.
You know what? I have to tell you, because we just did a New Beauty Live and we had Trell on. They are the makers of breast implants. And one of the things that was interesting is because it's a medical device, you're legally not allowed to say, I wanted something that looked natural, or it made me feel more confident. These are the two things, having had a boob job myself, that I tell people, oh my gosh, I wanted it to look natural and I feel so much more confident now. So it's very interesting that we're talking about, you know, the legalities of marketing and what you're allowed to do. Certainly, I think that the best use of Botox is when you can't tell that you had it, right?
Right, exactly. Right. But it's confusing to the patient because on the one hand, they say, I want to look natural. Although with Naturelle, I think they're so smart, they put it in the name.
Yeah,
so,
they did.
Like you're kind of saying it as you just ask for the thing. That's brilliant. But with Botox, patients are confused. They come in and on the one hand, they really do want to look authentic and natural. On the other hand, the way they're taught to judge outcome is by the amount of movement. And the two don't always go together. So a lot of what I do is I retrain and redirect and sort of help people understand the physics of it. And the reality is that, let's just take the forehead, for example, which is one of the areas where I'm least happy with Botox or any of the neuromodulators. I mean, let's not pick up Botox because I love that particular product, but I like all of them. So there's Botox, Dysport, Xeomin, and Jeuveau, which are all neuromodulators. And what they do is when you inject them into a muscle, they reduce the ability of that muscle to contract through mechanisms that we understand down to a molecular level. So this is the most understood drug known to mankind. It has the most published data and the most safety data. So it's something I'm very comfortable with. in terms of safety. Of course, everything has to be done properly and you have to select candidates. But if we take the forehead as an area, the forehead muscle is called the frontalis. That's your strongest and really your best lifting muscle of your brows.
Mine is like an Arnold Schwarzenegger because I feel like I get Botox, but really now, look, it's been 2 months. You can't really see it so much on here, but it's up at the top. The movement is there. It's back. And it's not that right. The Botox doesn't work. It's just, I think that muscle is like a professional bodybuilder.
Well, it should be because we're always talking about lifting, lifting, lifting. And that's your best lifting muscle. So why do you want to take it away? Instead of reducing the ability of that muscle to contract and hold up your brows, which keeps your eyelid out of your eyes, instead, we should relax the depressors, which are here pulling down and laterally as well, and then do other treatments that will lift the brow so you won't want to make that movement. The one area I almost never do in myself or even in my patients is the forehead, because the more you relax this muscle, the more over time your brows will drop and the older you're going to look and the faster you're going to age. So it's important to understand that sometimes there's an asymmetry we balance out, but not moving your forehead is not a natural look. And you should be able to move your forehead, but then not move it, right? So if I take away that heavy feeling of your eyelids, you won't feel like you have to contract that muscle all the time, and then you're going to age better. So when you can't use a muscle, you weaken the muscle, you age faster in that direction. The way that I learned to use neuromodulators that I think makes them new is that I'm not taking away movement, I'm redirecting it. So instead of taking away a line, say a line, take it away. No, I try to understand why you have that line and then work at the source of that so you naturally move in a more useful way. I'll give you another example. Lots of people have lines here, not the marionette lines, but further out on the side.
Somebody called them like accent lines, which I was like, they're accenting something that I don't want, right? I have them powerfully.
And what happens is that people go, okay, fill that line or do something to get rid of that line. But if you understand that line, most of the time that line comes from people who are grinders. So your masseter, the muscle you use to chew, which is out here, when you clench really hard, that muscle overgrows. Then your face becomes shorter. Your face ends here instead of back in front of your ears. So instead of just filling this line, if you put some Botox, which is my favorite product for this, into that masseter to relax it, then when you smile across the whole area, not from here to here, which then pushes and creates that line. So you relax the masseter, weaken it a little bit, which will save your teeth and your jaw. You can put a little filling behind it to lift, right? And to keep the angle of the jaw. And now you're going to fix that line without directly touching it. Because that line is a reaction. It's not a primary source. If you fill a primary source, what you're doing is you're creating an artificial change.
Okay.
But what I do is, and aesthetic physicians do, is we study anatomy, we study aging, we study movement, we study the asymmetries and help our patient redirect that energy to age more naturally.
You know, I want to just stop you for a second. I'm absolutely blown away. I was hoping that we could talk in this podcast about sort of new technologies, but what you are really showing me is that you are really versed on new ways to use very old, proven technologies. That's really incredible. So, you know, let's stick on this Botox, because I do think that that's one of the things that's in some ways the least scary to people because it's been used for so long. So what are some other places that you're putting it maybe that are either off label or maybe not as well known that you feel like instead of putting filler in here with the accent lines, you know, maybe try the Botox.
Right. And what we're doing is we're combining them. So in that case, it's Botox along with fillers to restructure. And it's really understanding that the way we age is multifactorial and multi-layered. We learn now. So it's not just your skin that's aging. It's the ligaments in the skin. It's fat. It's bone. And different parts of your face age at different rates. If we address that, not to refill what's lost, but to maintain the balance, then we help our patients not necessarily look like they're 20, because you can't look like you're 20 when you're 50. It's not possible, nor is it appropriate. But what happens is that you look authentically beautiful.
Can I say that you look stunning? I mean, you really do look absolutely beautiful. And I think that's so important. You know, we see sometimes when things go wrong, and I don't know about you, but I believe that a lot of the times when filler sort of goes wrong, when Botox goes wrong, is when people are trying to create volume or create structures that weren't there to begin with, right? Yes. So if you don't have cheekbones and you try to create them, I'm not talking about enhance them. I'm talking about create different mm-hmm. face shapes. It's going to look unnatural.
It does. It looks unnatural, but what it also does is it affects people's self-esteem because they don't own the look and they're right. dependent on an outside source to maintain it. And what they do is they keep coming in and wanting more because they're afraid they're going to wake up one day and have it be gone. So they right. ask for more. The first question I ask a patient is, would you ever have plastic surgery? Because if somebody wants in their mind, if they have a vision of a facelift, I don't do that. That's not my goal. It's not what I do. And I can't satisfy a patient who is thinking facelift in terms of outcome. And so I refer them to a plastic surgeon. The only patients I want to treat are patients who under no circumstances want a facelift or who've had one and want to maintain those results.
Do you mean like don't category. Want one ever? Because I have to say I'm now not early ever. 40s. Yeah. Okay. Because yeah. I'm like,
oh, please. I don't even say I don't want one ever. So.
Okay. I love 59. It. Keep it real. I'm like, I don't know if I'm probably going to want one one day, but I would, you know, it's interesting with what you're seeing and the way that, you know, they say now, you know, 50 is the new 40 and 60 is the new 50 and all of this. But I do wonder, do you think a lot of these things that we're doing are sort of putting off the need to have a facelift? And do you, in your professional opinion, think that it's possible that as technologies keep going, that we might never have to have facelifts?
Yeah. Well, to some extent, maybe full facelifts, but there's little tweaks. Upper lid bless, maybe you're still going to need right. that. There's little tweaks. I think that we will be able to put off a facelift in the future because we still have new technologies coming, ones where we can remove small amounts of skin that may be coming later this year. Allergan just acquired the license to a new product that will take out micro cores of skin along the neck, and then you'll get like 10% of tightening and you could do it a few times. And there's little to no downtime from what I'm hearing, little to no downtime and no scarring. So these are exciting things that are coming that if we start early, we can help people always look good. And about never needing a facelift, it depends on genetics, sun exposure, sure. diet, exercise, stress. All of those things have a huge impact on how you age. And my favorite line, I think it's the best line I've come up with in my 20 years of practice, is that nothing looks more beautiful in your 50s than sun protection in your 20s. And we can do all the
other things. Amen. Yes. Right? I mean, yes. I am such a sunscreen girl, but you know what? Look, and it happens. In my 20s, I was a tanning bed girl. I'm not proud of it. Now I do a lot of sunscreen, and I'm embarrassed to say this. I don't know if you can see a line.
Oh, here. I see it now.
I covered
it's,
myself.
It's faint.
It's faint, but it shouldn't be at all.
Right. I don't disagree. And I tell people too, especially young people, the base of the neck is the most important place to protect. And what I'm learning too, is that this area, this little area that's from the nasolabial fold down to the marionette lines, ages the same way your neck ages. Okay. This area ages much faster than everywhere else on your face. It has different vascularity, different nerve supply, and it just ages so much more poorly. And when I look at women, especially very fair-skinned women, as they age, that area in particular is always decades ahead.
In your 20s, going to be really honest here now, did you go out in the sun? Were you always protected? I mean, tell us.
I was very lucky in that my father was the youngest child, and he had sisters who were 15 years older than him who aged very poorly because they grew up in this small farm village outside of Iran. And so he always told me, and I'm going to fake his accent, but he always said, never go in the sun, never go in the sun. So there was like one time I sat in the sun,
I love 10 him
minutes
right
in
now.
College, and he's like, you remember that time you sat in the sun? And I said, don't sit in the sun. So I was like, for the rest of my life, I had, and he goes, now you are the dermatologist. So he made fun of me forever for that 10 minutes I sat outdoors without enough sunscreen in his view. But he always knew. And so we were always protected with clothing.
Yeah. And I got to say, so if anybody, if you're just listening to this and you're not watching this podcast now, go over to YouTube. You have to see Dr. Day because I mean, you do, you look flawless. And so if there's 20-year-olds listening right now, you know, go take a look at that. I'm sorry. How old did you say you were before?
59. Yeah.
Run to YouTube and run to get SPF 1000. You know, going back to like the cool ways that we can use Botox. I've heard a lot about like the lips now, right? And that lip flip.
That's what I was getting to next.
Oh yeah. Let's give it to me.
So the one is, I'll say first that when you said 60 is the new 50, I think 60 is the new 60. Because I'm looking forward to it. I love my 50s. 40 was like a little rough because I was like, okay, this is going to be a change. But once you kind of get over that you're not having any more kids and like life is going to be different, when you hit your 50s and 60s, what happens is that you realize that you land in yourself a bit and you still have at least half of your life in front of you because we're living longer and living healthier. So it's about me when you hit that. This is part two of life. My kids are grown. My daughter's in medical school. Your second act. And it's a great new start in many ways, building on a strong foundation, hopefully. So 60 is the new 60 in that people look vibrant and we get over this hardwired sense of having to look young related to fertility. And now we get to this other kind of beauty. That's a beauty that's partly physical, where it's about having balance and good skin quality and maintaining those results. But it's also about a life that's well-lived. It's about fulfillment and accomplishment and gratitude and service and teaching and all those things. That's where beauty comes through in a way it can't in your 20s, that I think is even more beautiful than what we see in youth. But we have to, in our brains, kind of get over the idea of youth and look at it as a different type of beauty. And that's how we evolve as humans, and that's what makes us special as a species. Now, in terms of how we use Botox, because there are still physical aspects of aging that we want to slow down or even turn around if we can. And again, I don't do surgery, so I'm always looking for non-surgical options to maintain that balance. So with the upper lip, what happens is you lose lip volume, and then there's two kinds of gummy smile. One is where your lip curls under, where the muscle contracts, which makes your lip turn into a line, but the distance from your nose to your upper lip stays the same. And the other is where you actually fold up, where this distance shortens, but your lip kind of stays. So you need a physician who knows how to assess what kind of change your lip has as you smile, because it's different muscles you're going to inject. When you want to do the lip flip and prevent the curl under, you're really along the border of the lip, and that's going to prevent that muscle from contracting. And this way, when you smile, you still have a lot of red show, the vermilion of the lip, the meaty part of your lip showing.
And at rest, because I've heard that like a lot of like, I call them the kids these days, but like a lot of younger people are doing this to get that kind of like, you know, that non-filler, but fuller look. Non-filler, fuller look? Is that possible?
Yes, non-filler, fuller look. It's possible. But if you don't have that as a problem, it's not going to do that much.
Fair.
So it's
really,
it's like taking supplements of vitamins when you don't have a deficiency. You're not going to see much of a difference. So it's fine. It probably helps a little bit, but not a whole lot. And then when you're not going to do a lot of good, then you have to worry about the risks more. The risk is that you can have an uneven smile. And so that's a real risk. You have to be careful in how you do it. And if you barely have a curl under, you're not going to get too much of an improvement. And so that risk becomes more important to consider. The pull up is you're injecting a little bit higher and then along the side of the nose. So there's different areas to inject. You can even pick up the tip of the nose a little bit by doing a little bit of Botox there. So there's a lot that we can do. And it all comes down to two things, anatomy and physics. Anatomy is knowing the muscles, the muscle groups, how they move and how they sit together and what plane of the skin they lived in. And then the physics is in what direction that muscle is pulling. Because when you inactivate the pull, then the opposing muscle that pulls in the opposite direction is now going to be stronger. So when you relax the forehead muscle, the pulling up gets weak, the pulling down gets stronger automatically because it's unopposed.
Got it.
You're always redirecting.
Like a pulley system. Sure.
Exactly. And muscles can only pull, they can't push. For every muscle pulling in one direction, there's one pulling in the other. And you have to be careful, because if there's muscles that are sitting on top of each other that have different directional movements, and you're in the wrong plane, or if the Botox migrates, you're going to hit two different muscles, and you can drool, you can have an uneven smile, and it's problematic. So it's nothing to be taken lightly ever. It's never, to me, a spa treatment. It should never be done by somebody who doesn't understand anatomy, and also understand that your left and right side are different. And sometimes, like if I look at you, you smile to your left. So
totally.
Your left side is stronger than your right.
Is much stronger. Yes.
So what I try to teach people is to smile the other way, and where that smile, yes, exactly. And to do it by looking in the mirror, the muscle is coming from way at the base of the nose. So I have people put their finger here and try to move one way, and then try to move the other, not with your finger, but you want to feel the muscle engage. So now try to lift your left side, just try to pull up, and then the right side. And one side should be a little bit easier. And the reason you're pressing there is that's the muscle you want to feel contracting.
So is that something we should be practicing at home? I love that. Like a little facial workout.
Yep. And there's more facial workout.
Oh, yeah. Tell us.
Okay. So I'm going to turn a little bit sideways. It's the ear lift. So I call it the squishing your ears back, or the invisible smile. So here's one face where my ears are down. It's kind of a relaxed face. And then this is my ears up, down, up. See them going up?
Yeah, I can't. How are you even...
So one way to see if you can do it is if you just take a deep breath in and relax and breathe all the way out, and then smile big, you can feel your ears going back. And the reason to smile is because you want to relax the face. Sometimes when your face is overall too tense, there's kind of too much background noise, you can't do it. It took me a year to figure it out to how to isolate that muscle. But I think the invisible smile is the best way, because when you see somebody smile big, their ears usually go back. And the beauty of it is, and the beauty of Botox and those equivalents, is that we know that facial expressions are tied to emotion as much as emotion is tied to expression. So if you are feeling sad, you make a sad face. That makes sense. But if you actually smile, even if you're not feeling happy, you start to feel happier.
Yes.
So when you make this expression, it's a smile, even though I'm not doing it from the mouth, but just pulling back and using that component of my smile, I feel happier. I'm more present. I'm more connected. I call it good facial posture. So when I improve my facial posture, I look younger, I feel happier, and you feel my connectedness more, which is contagious because it makes you happier. Right. And that's the goal of what I do, not just to make you look better, but to make you better, to make you happier, to make you more positive in your life, to help you make better choices.
Well, I know that they are actually starting to do studies on Botox for depression, but
it's done.
It's done.
Yeah.
I know when I have Botox, I'm less depressed. So, I know it's a different kind of study, but, it definitely makes me feel better. And listen, like you said, you know, when we look better, we do feel better.
And we make project better choices.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I know that you have to get to patients today. I want to go back to one last thing and sort of point this out for anybody who's listening. It is so apparent that you are so knowledgeable. And I just want to give a little shout out here to New Beauty Magazine, because you are one of their top doctors. And I think that one of the things that you have made so clear is that when it comes to Botox or any injections, so much relies on the hands of the provider, and you need to find somebody who is really skilled in this. I want to say that New Beauty does have a great find a top doctor in your area, so you can go on that site. Certainly, if you're in New York City, I think that everybody has made it, you've made it clear that you certainly know what you're doing. Do you have any other advice for people to find a doctor that they trust?
I think New Beauty is such a great resource, and they're a resource both in a physical magazine, but also an online resource. They have a great presence on social media. I've never met a group of people who are more committed to educating the public on all of the latest treatments available, and to give them as many options as possible, with a broad range of brilliant physicians and colleagues that I admire and respect. And I think they're just such a great resource.
I do too. So I had recently joined the team, and a big part of my career has been about not, you know, separating sort of the marketing buzz from the science. And I've fallen in love with the team at New Beauty because they care so much about the science and getting results. And it is a wonderful community. Dr. Day, thank you so, so much. If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to know more about you, if they want to see your fabulous social media, where should they go?
It's at Dr. Doris Day, at Dr. Doris Day on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, my website. It's all at Dr. Doris Day.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Keeping it easy for us. And at home, if you have any questions you want us to pass along to Dr. Doris Day, we're happy to do that. You can email us at hello@artbeautypodcast.com. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and here on YouTube at Art Beauty Podcast. We will see you next Tuesday. Thank you, Dr. Day. And stay tuned for more of this fabulous summer series brought to you in partnership with New Beauty Magazine. Bye.
Bye.